is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper? A woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver. I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions 18 plus.
Welcome to Screen Talk, IndieWire's weekly podcast. I'm Eric Cohn, the executive editor and chief critic, joined as always by Ann Thompson, our editor at large. And Ann, we have some new awards to talk about. We've got to that point in the season with the Gotham nominees, which obviously tell us exactly what's going to win at the Oscars, right?
Well, the point of this group, of which you are a member, along with, it seems, everybody in the New York office at IndieWire, basically you guys help to figure out the nominees in different categories, and then there's a group of filmmakers and others who figure out what the winners are.
Right.
Right, and then there's an audience award that's voted on. Online, but this is not about what this is honoring worthy independent films, some of which have not been very well seen. And there are very few films on this list that are actually going to be in the Oscar race, although there are a few.
I have to say, well, so I've done this for a number of years. It's a very gratifying process when you see a lot of movies at festivals for months at a time to get into a room with a couple of critics, not all of whom see eye to eye on everything, and talk through some of these possibilities, because after 90 minutes, 2 hours, something like that, you come up with a list that hopefully you can stand behind. And I really do feel like the best feature, which was the committee that I was on this year, if you watch these movies, you're going to see an excellent sampling of American cinema, American independent cinema from the past year.
Yeah, so what I liked about it, I was impressed. What I liked about it too is that there are several films on here that I still have to see. And now I looked each one of them up just to see exactly what they were and how well they were reviewed and how well they did at the box office and stuff. And they are not going to be in the Oscar race, but they could be in the Independent Spirit Awards race, and they could be movies that all of us should catch up with, like Andrew Bujalski's Support the Girls,
I love that movie.
Or Michelle Pfeiffer's Where is Kyra? Madeline's Madeline, which people raved about.
Madeline's Madeline is really a terrific achievement. And also Josephine Decker is a filmmaker who has not been sort of appreciated in sort of her breakout stage, when she made a couple of very small, very low budget films. And this is, it's not a film that could have been seen as sort of a, you know, the new director's new films kind of class, because she's actually been through that phase already. So I think it is at a point where she should be recognized as a major filmmaker. And to see her in a category alongside First Reform, The Favorite, Beale Street, and The Writer, I mean, I really feel like all of these filmmakers are operating at the peak of their powers. And although I know that some of these films are not really going to be serious Oscar contenders,
but partly because nobody's seen them. I mean, something like Madeline's Madeline literally did 185,000 at the box office via
Oscilloscope. It was a very small release.
On the other hand, the Thoroughbreds did some business, and maybe Support the Girls is something that it's a comedy that people really like.
It's got Regina Hall, and she's amazing at it. Yeah. Never better, I think. But you also have The Favorite, and you have If Beale Street Could Talk, which are awards.
Totally. And BlacKkKlansman. And I would love to see this kind of attention for Leave No Trace encourage people to watch the film. I know what a long shot it is. I know how people see it, but it's really good. It's one of the best movies of the year, and I would like to think that people would get over their prejudices and actually look at it.
But you also have to acknowledge the film that really came out ahead that a lot of headlines were playing up here, and that's First Reformed. Got Best Feature, got Best Screenplay, and
it has a shot, especially if the critics come through at the end of the year.
And critics, I mean, when I talk to so many people, really, really do feel strongly about this movie. more so than a lot of fall movies that have screened.
Well, we've talked about this before. Schrader's overdue for a screenplay nomination. I was sorry to see Nicole Holofcener's script for Can You Ever Forgive Me not making it onto that list, which includes The Favorite and a movie that I didn't think was that well written, Thoroughbreds. Not really. And First Reformed, I agree with. Private Life is extraordinary. And again, I have to see Support the Girls, but you know, that would have been a good one to get in there.
Yeah, I mean, you know, part of the challenge is that there's a limited number of slots. So with something like that, it's like you never, there are a lot of different factors at play. I think the screenplay for Can You Ever Forgive Me is great. I think the film is one of the better pieces of American filmmaking I've seen made on that level this
year. Which opens this weekend. And so we encourage everybody. I mean, it's such a surprise. There's a good story behind it in the sense that Holofcener did write this with the intention of directing it. And unfortunately, the project fell apart with Julianne Moore departing 6 days. Everything was ready to go. Everything was set up.
You know what, Julianne Moore?
She was so heartbroken, she just gave it up. She couldn't see doing it over again.
But I feel like Julianne Moore can't get all the great roles, you know? Like, it really worked out for the best for
Melissa
McCarthy.
Melissa McCarthy and Richard Eager.
She's so good. And I've been really enjoying her promotional tour.
Me
I was
too.
Listening to her on The Daily Show. When she talks about all these auditions she went on, where it was like, she has this imitation of being the wife on sitcoms, where she'd just be saying, Bill or Ted or Steve, like all these different guy names, like those were the roles she was auditioning for. Now she's got this role that's complete. It's not, you know, the character is complicated, but also not subservient to some, you know, male person. And I feel like it's sort of the apotheosis of maybe what she's been trying to get to for a really long period of time. Also, it's nice to see the crossover, you know, like there are a lot of different people who like this movie, to see Richard Brody like it, but also some of the more kind of populist critics. It's a nice balance in that respect.
Well, it's utterly authentic in the sense that it's recreating this person who really existed, who wrote an entire memoir about this experience. So they got her, apparently.
Yeah.
Lee
Israel. It's a bummer. I wasn't on the Best Actress panel, so I don't know what the conversations were about.
Yeah, where is Melissa McCarthy?
I do think it's one of those things where it's like all it takes is maybe one person who wasn't crazy enough about the movie or something like that, or they really wanted to get Regina Hall in there, which I think is awesome. Catherine Hahn's really good in Private Life. I have to tell you, I have yet to watch The Wife.
You're going to never watch it.
I promise you. Before I vote for New York Film Critics Circle,
you must.
And all that, I will. I have the screener. It's in the works.
What you have here, though, is because you don't have supporting actor and actress. You jam everybody into the same. So the men are Adam Driver, Ben Foster, who's very good in Leave No Trace, Richard E. Grant, who's a real supporting a character for that Can You Ever Forgive Me, Ethan Hawke, and then Lakeith Stanfield for Sorry to Bother You. All terrific, of course.
Yeah, although I thought it was interesting that they went for another comedian I wasn't on, for Adam Driver and not John David Washington, who, I mean, the second time I saw that movie, I remember thinking like, wow, there's so much about this performance I didn't notice the first time around. That is, it's a breakout, but
Agreed.
It's also a great lead
Agreed.
Role. And Adam Driver's good, but he's not the essence of the movie to me. I don't know.
No.
A little strange, that one.
And then the breakthrough actor category makes perfect sense with Thompson Harcourt for Leave No Trace and Helena Howard for Madeline and Kiki Lane for If Beale Street Could Talk and Elsie Fisher for Eighth Grade and the great Yalitza Aparicio for Roma, who I believe of this list is the one who might get nominated.
Yeah, I mean, the thing about her, it's sort of like, you know, Roman's going for so many different categories and they're really pushing for it to be this major front runner. But it seems like Aparicio is the one who's the easy slam dunk, which is sort of crazy when you think about it, considering that, you know, just a couple of months ago, nobody knew and had heard of her before, and they still really haven't, although I've noticed.
Like, she's necessarily going to be one of the great actresses to go on to an enormous career. But she's perfectly cast for this, and Cuarón gets an amazing performance out of her, and in many ways because he manipulates her in certain situations, which we won't go into right now. But it's true that there's an enormous amount of emotion attached to several of her sequences that people will never forget.
I'm curious about how Roma will continue to be a talking point, because in this award season, you have this popular favorite, which is A Star Is Born, and it's a pretty easy movie to talk about. Roma is a movie that people come out of reeling, but they also they don't totally know what to make of it at first. A lot of people I know love it, but they have different kinds of takes on it, and then some people aren't sure if they love it or if it's like, is it too much of Cuarón's perspective on this woman we don't really get to know? And to me, those conversations are indicative of a great movie that has this kind of impact.
Yes, I agree. It's something people can debate and discuss, and they can talk about the filmmaking techniques and all the different things that go into it. I think it's comparable to The Shape of Water or, God forbid, Birdman, in the sense that this is one of those movies that combines an extraordinary accessibility with the groundbreaking artistry that you would expect of a Best Picture winner. That's one of the reasons I think it could go all the way.
But, you know, I was thinking about this announcement this past week from Netflix and their quarter earnings. They said that 80 million people or something ridiculous like that had watched rom-coms over the summer on Netflix. And To All the Boys I've Loved Before was the most rewatched film in history.
Watched that and I hated it.
Okay, whatever. I mean,
I bailed on it. I didn't see the whole thing.
You didn't finish it? I slept through parts of it.
I heard enough about it so that I checked it out.
It's couch viewing, and it's designed for a very passive viewership. And then I'm thinking, like, this
or
is
young, if you like.
Well, young too, of course. That's one of the reasons why it does. But the thing is, so this is the platform that's going to launch Roma all over the world. Is any aspect of that viewership willing to commit itself to a movie like this? I hope so. I want it to, but I think it's a real open question. And
well,
whether
it's
or
nice
not Netflix
to think
will.
That it would play in all the Latin American countries, for example.
Well, I don't know. I mean, look, half my family's Colombian, but that doesn't mean they necessarily want to watch, you know, a sad story about somebody who resembles someone in their house when they were growing up. I mean, I think that's a real open question about who the audience for Roma is.
I think it has a more universal resonance than that. I mean, I didn't grow up in the 70s in Mexico City, but there was stuff going on in this movie that I could relate to pretty powerfully, that I totally was immersed in it. And I think most people that I've talked to saw it who did not grow up in 70s Mexico City, or maybe didn't even have a nanny, or maybe didn't have a cleaning lady that they were close to or anything like that. I'm using very politically incorrect language. They really like it too. So I don't know why that would be an impediment. It's an art film though. That may be what you're talking about.
I think the movie is very effective at creating a world, and you get immersed in that world. So the emotion catches you off guard. A lot of people, they weren't prepared for it. So the challenge with that is you have to subject yourself to that experience and go through, you know, it's like an hour into the movie before you really get a sense of where you're heading. And even then, there's still a lot that happens. So you have to commit to that experience. So the Netflix data that we may never see, but would be very instructive.
People turning it off.
Yeah, who turned it off or skipped it.
Yeah, all right. The other question, that there are several things that came up this week also. One was, what is the real release plan going to be? Again, there's debate about whether the information I have is that the movie's going to be playing long-ended runs, that they're not one-week runs, and that Landmark and IFC and Alamo are planning to play it for as long as they want to, as long as it's playing, as long as it's working. And then that there are going to be other bookings at Dolby Atmos theaters that could be quote-unquote four-wall bookings. But I don't know. So that's a weird thing that this would only be for 1 week, day and date. I don't think that's true. I really don't. And I think that will help the movie if it's not true. If it plays longer, the more they can build up buzz and word of mouth, the better it will help the movie. And I also have, there's still this ongoing discussion about whether Netflix is in some level something that Academy members resist or push against and resent. And I don't see that as an overall thing, but you can't take the entire membership of the Academy and say that it's true for X number of them. You can't. It's just huge. So you don't know where it falls.
I'm sure there's reason to be paranoid to some degree within Netflix about perception and how that can hurt a movie. But it doesn't seem like if the movie's good enough and people are watching and having the kind of experience that they think the movie delivers, then they should have nothing to worry about in that respect. So in other news, we also have a much bigger immediate story in that there's this wide release of Halloween coming out, projected to make $100 million, something like that. And you wrote this great story about working on the set of the original. I have to tell you, I think I had more fun reading your story than watching the new Halloween, which I thought was okay. I got
a kick out of it. I mean, I wasn't expecting anything. Remember, we're talking about a movie that was the first movie back in 78 was fantastic. I always loved it. I rewatched it.
I rewatched it right before I saw the new one.
Although when you saw it, you must have been aware that it had an influence on a lot of other movies that came after. It was innovative at the time to do those kind of tracking shots through the house and be so manipulative about the unseen shadows and what's around the corner, and that kind of Steadicam thing was new at that time. the subsequent, you know, sequels and things were so bad that we tend to think badly of it. In fact, this movie's pretty good.
I thought it was very uneven. My issue with it was that there was a lot of in jokes and stuff like that leading up to the actual kind of, you know, Halloween centerpiece, which is Jason, I got my franchise confused.
Michael Myers, the shape
versus
Jamie Lee Curtis as Laurie Strode.
Right? So she's great. Her persona, hard drinking woman, still traumatized, all that stuff. Overly paranoid in the minds of all her family and stuff.
Oh, they think she's crazy.
I thought that part of it worked. And the final image of the movie, the final moments worked. It had a lot of padding to me.
I know. But the great set piece is when the three women finally, the mother, the grandmother, and the kid, are reunited and trained to fight the shape. And I loved that. I loved all the twists and turns, and David Gordon Green did a good job. He was honoring the original without imitating it and keeping it in the same world. And still it was frightening. And I just got off on the female empowerment. That's the way it is.
Well, I guess that's the one thing the movie has to deliver above all else, given the kind of iconic nature of that character and the final girl trope. It's interesting because it sort of coincided with this little blip in the media cycle when Jason Blum did an interview with Polygon where he was like, it's not our fault we're not hiring enough women directors or something like that. And then everyone's
saying there weren't enough. It was great on Twitter, especially on film Twitter, especially on female film Twitter, to see the barrage of recommendations from all over the world. And it's a sign of how less than conscious people like Jason Blum are. You know, they think they're not.
He's very confident in ways that I think are actually kind of naive because, he's around, but he's around when he has like a movie on the circuit or whatever. He's not going to a horror festival and watching all these movies. You know,
but
like
somebody on his team probably is, it's just that they may not be looking for women directors as hard as they're saying.
I mean, the
argument was that they were going to the A-list women that we all know who they are, who weren't interested in their bullshit B movies and only want to do the best movies.
There's a lot to untangle here, but basically, hopefully the good that comes out of it is that it just, you know, allows people to hold his feet to the fire now because he's apologized and said that they haven't done a good enough job working with female directors, so maybe there'll be a next phase to all this. The more people
and the Marvel people are trying, and they got
Chloe Zhao. I mean, that's awesome.
She's awesome.
So in any case, I think that it is a movie of people who want to go see a fun horror movie over the weekend can get something out of. But, you know, don't forget to watch the original if you haven't yet, because that still reigns supreme. So next week, I guess we'll have a chance to take a look at how some certain things are doing at the box office. We've also got a couple more fall festival things right around the corner with AFI Fest, so we can look ahead to that. until then, I hope you are staying sane as this award season cycle keeps moving along. Have a good weekend, Dan.
You too, Eric.